to contemplate. But opening the show up, I'm really pleased to welcome, in one case at least, back to the show, but also everybody else who's here. I don't know if you've, I think you've all been, this is the first time you've been here?
First time. Mm-hmm.
First time.
Okay, good. We have rules. but I'm very, very pleased to be welcoming the people from the Fountain Theater here in L.A., and we're talking about, it's actor Bo Foxworth, Judith Moreland, director Michael, is it Michetti or McKetti?
McKetti,
okay. And co-producer Stephen Sachs. Stephen, welcome back, man.
Good to be here, yeah. As always.
Yeah, Stephen's an old hand at this.
Oh, yeah.
He knows what button to push if you start, you have to be teased. Anyway, on a more serious note, I saw a play at the Fountain Theater a week or two ago, and it was really, it was just incredible. It was just an amazing, amazing piece of work, and it's called Building the Wall. And I'm not going to tell you what it's about. I'm going to ask somebody else to tell you what it's about. In fact, what I think I'll do is I'll ask Stephen first. Actually, would that be better, or you guys can pick. Stephen, you want
to work together?
Okay, yeah. Tag team. Right. Just tell people what it is, because I really want people to understand this is a tremendously important play that no one should miss, and that people should really hear what it's about, because it actually says a lot of truth about what's in the world, and it's also something that you don't go home and just say, hey, that was cool, can I get a beer, turn on TV. You go home and you want to talk. I went home with my wife and said, we got to talk right now, we got to talk. So it's, but that's it, because people are thinking, because the situation is so damn serious in the world today and here in this country, and that's what this play is about. So go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this new play, Building the Wall, is the kind of theater that definitely triggers conversation and dialogue with audiences after seeing it. It's a brand new play written by playwright Robert Schenken, who's a Tony Award winning and Pulitzer Prize winning playwright and screenwriter. He wrote Hacksaw Ridge. And this is an urgent new play that he's written that takes place in 2019, just two years from now. And it is a cautionary tale, an imagining of just what may happen in this country if the immigration policies of the current administration move forward. It takes place in a prison meeting room. It's a two-character play, and you meet the character of Rick, who is has been convicted of a horrific crime that we learn more about through the course of the play. And he is being interviewed by Gloria. And her job is to get to the truth, because Rick has been forbidden to testify at his own trial, at his own lawyer's advice. So this is Rick's one chance to tell the truth about what happened and the unrolling of this policy of rounding up immigrants and detaining them in the private prison system, and how that policy unraveled into a nightmare that is unimaginable.
And that's where we'll keep the whole description, because when you go beyond nightmare, I get worried that somebody's going to slip up and say, oh, yeah, and then it was about this. You can't do that in this play. You really have to do it.
Dance
Michael,
around the end.
Yeah. Michael, let's talk about your take on – you're the director of this, and – were you familiar with the play? Were you familiar with the work? Were you familiar with the playwright's work?
Well, I certainly was familiar with the playwright's work. Robert Schenken is a really esteemed and respected playwright, and I've seen many of his works through the years, beginning with Kentucky Cycle, which was done many years ago at the Taper, and was my first exposure to him as a playwright. I had not been familiar with the play until Stephen and Simon Levy gave me a copy of it and said, might you be interested in this? Because, of course, the play was written so recently. Robert actually began writing it, wrote the first draft of it even prior to Trump winning the election, but in fear that that might happen. But even that was, October of last year. And I only received a copy of the script. Our first meeting about the play was 2 months before our opening. It happened so quickly. Immediately as I read the play, I realized how important and powerful it was. And as Stephen said, it is a cautionary tale. We also want it to be a call to action. We want people to be aware of the play presents a possible scenario of how each step from here could grow into the unthinkable. And we need to stop these acts before this is set into action. So there are a lot of things that the Fountain is also doing around the project to continue the dialogue and make sure that we don't go home all feeling depressed and suicidal, but take action, including the fact that the Fountain is putting in every program a postcard addressed to the White House, and there is an encouragement at the end of the show for everyone to write something, anything that they feel on whatever side of this issue they are, but to our president and continue to try to take action to prevent this.
No, I didn't get one because I was going to put down "Screw you, you Nazi dog."
A lot of people did.
Yeah, well, they should. They really should. All right, one more question for you, Michael, because this is something too that I got. You know, you're talking about building the wall, and this has been a battle cry of Trump. You know, so it's really interesting that with the title of the play and then Trump's battle cry, but it takes on a whole different thing. There's a literal wall as well as the wall that's happening in people's minds. And I think that's really important in terms of, because it basically, building a wall permits all kinds of things to happen, atrocities in the name of protecting the innocent, all kinds of things to happen. What did you think about when you took this up as the director in relation to that?
Yeah, well, there's no question Robert uses a wall as a metaphor in the play a number of times, and actually the final images, which I won't give away, but talk about that as well. It's absolutely true. The other thing that I think that Robert has done beautifully here is that he has articulated through humanizing these two characters, Gloria, who is a very liberal history professor, and Rick, who is a conservative Trump-voting Texan man, but he humanizes both of these characters. And one of the things that we discover in the course of the play is the kind of walls between these two camps that we have established. And it's very difficult because until we can really have the conversations, we will not heal that. And it's easy for any of us who feel strongly on one side or the other to look only at our point of view and not consider the other. And until we do consider what the other side wants and find the ways to heal those differences and come to an understanding, we will never be able to resolve this. So, of course, those of us who are fearful of Trump's policies are resisting. We are doing it through art. But the play is also trying to humanize and begin to tear down walls between people just in understanding as well, which I think is crucial.
You know, it's interesting because I got part of the take I had on it was also this thing, though, that there was a breakdown in the course of the play in terms of a certain sense, but it was also, I have to tell you, Judith Moreland, I really liked your character. Not that I didn't like yours, Bo, but I liked your work.
Much more likable.
I know. But there's a thing, you know. Look, I don't want to normalize Trump. You know, I don't want to know. I think we have to. There's no understanding of Trump except you're going to understand how this man has what threat he is to humanity. You know, and to me, it's really important to get that.
I agree with that. I think that's crucial. But there's a difference between that and understanding the people who supported him, mm-hmm. and what the motivation was for that. I agree. We can't normalize Trump, mm-hmm. but he was speaking to people who had who were feeling disenfranchised in a way, and I think we need to understand that.
Right. No, I agree. And I think actually, although one thing, I'll tell you, Bo, there were a number of times I just felt like standing up and slapping you in the head.
Yeah, I felt the same way about myself.
I noticed you were doing that live on the show. No, but it's true. It's basically testimony to the power of the character that was created. But Judith, let's talk with you a little bit because, okay. And with both of you, I'll pose this to both of you because there's the two characters and there's a way that you're portrayed as so normal. On one level, you know, you're talking to each other. There's a normalcy that's going on there, but there's something very terrible and earth-shaking that each of you is carrying with them, and all this is done so matter-of-factly. And to a degree, there's almost a sense of understanding that develops around that in a certain sense. Let's talk about your characters and what they're carrying with them and how they're coming into this.
Well, when I read the first draft of the script, there wasn't a lot of backstory or information about Gloria. And in conversation with both Michael, Robert Schenken, the playwright, and Stephen Sachs, we talked about how important it was for Gloria, who is really, in a sense, the audience, the people who are... they see the play through me, trying to understand who Rick is. We all felt that there needed to be a sense of not only who Gloria was, but that even though she's liberal and probably her policies are shared by many in the audience, that she's not perfect, that she has her flaws, and that she has as many ideas about the other as Rick does, that she certainly does bring her preconceived notions into the room as well. And so Robert did such a beautiful job of writing a very specific backstory of why Gloria is a historian and why she is so interested in not only cataloging what Rick has done, but also trying to come to an understanding of why he makes the choices that he does. So kudos to Robert for doing that. Gloria is a flawed person, as we all are, and her preconceived ideas about Rick are challenged very early on in the play. The character of Rick says, I'm not as dumb as you think. It turns out Rick tells a very long story about his father, because of healthcare issues, losing a lot of money and having to work. Rick talks about his people that he knows losing their homes. And these are all issues that Gloria relates to and has happened in her life as well. So what's so wonderful about it is that there is a consensus in the room of each of us seeing something in the other that we can relate to and that we identify with. And so it makes the conversation even more fraught when you start to see what our differences are.
Well, that's the thing. And it's also true. I think, look, you also bring something into the room that needs to be there, because it's, and I thought it was very interesting that you would do this, you know, and because you're a black woman and you bring a whole history that, you know, is not that too often this country tries to bury, hide, purify, mm-hmm. you know, all this stuff. And it's, and I was telling you later, I'm going to be talking with Howard students, and they're, one of the things they're going up against is this whole effort to say, like, you know, look, all that's in the past now. It's not something that, look, this is something that it's, one, it's not in the past. And two, you know, it's something that really has to be dealt with. And it's something that Trump has been, you know, I mean, look, that bastard is like, bam, he's like, you know, his idea, he told the historic black college and universities, he said, well, we're moving you into the White House, but you ain't getting no money. You know, so it's like, yeah. And so it's like, we're moving you in so we can keep an eye on you and have you do what we need to do. But there's a point of the history you carry with you that has to, that comes into this. It's not a bad thing, because I think it infuses you with an understanding of sort of the hell that can be unleashed against the whole people.
Well, I think so too, and I think it's, again, it's interesting that Robert Chaykin wrote the character to be a African American. That's specifically in the script, and I think it's just for those reasons. Here is a white male who spends a lot of time saying, "What about me? Who talks for us now?" Mm. And it's, as an African American, even watching what's happening in the world right now and people, Trump supporters, it's very ironic, and in a way. A lot of my black friends and I, we were like, my family were like, well, welcome to our side.
But also doesn't, you know, it also doesn't like. Claim to be racist. I mean, he doesn't see himself that way, and it has opened up a whole can of something I can't say, but you know, this deep-seated racism that has been existing for so long that has just sort of been bubbling underneath the surface, and Trump has allowed it to surface and come out, and these people who feel they can now do and say things that were, you know, not acceptable.
Well, tell me that
a few years ago.
Yeah, and I thought, and actually, I just want to let people know again that we are talking with Bo Foxworth, all right? Because yeah. I have to, I really want people to know who you guys are. Okay. And he's 6'9" and he's 450 pounds.
Massive.
Right? Anyway, the thing is what I got, you know, because look, I grew up with a lot of the people that were like your character. You know, I grew up.
So did
very,
I.
Yeah. Okay. So I grew up in a very poor part of Philadelphia, and it was sort of a, you know. When I was telling somebody once that we used to sit on the steps and we thought we were seeing fireworks, and it was actually all the skies would light up, you know, and it was actually the oil refineries blowing the gas out. It was like lighting up on all different colored lights, and then we had the amusement time was when the mosquito truck would come down the street spraying, you know, whatever DDT out the back, and we were running in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So people remember this stuff. But there's, you know, which made us all very dumb. But the thing is that there is this thing, though, too, with not just, there wasn't, you know, I think this point about the entitlement that actually is concentrated in your character as well. You know, because, yes, your character has, look, there's a certain thing he doesn't like what he ends up having to do or the direction he's being pushed in. Mm-hmm. He's moved to tears. But for a whole lot of what actually moved him into the Trumpian world was a sense of entitlement. Not just that I was getting screwed, mm-hmm. but damn it, I don't deserve to be screwed. I have a right to this stuff. And it was sort of, it's very interesting the way that falls
out. Yeah, that this sense that this is our country, you know, the white people, the Christian man, it is, I don't know where that's come out of. I mean, it's been there forever, I guess, but or as long as we've been here. But I think Rick is. I don't sense that entitlement from him in the playing of in the working on this character, but that he was found himself in a place and in a position where he was forced into this place. But I mean, I have to see him from a different I'm trying to see him from a different, very opposite point of view.
You're looking
my
from
own,
the inside,
yes.
Out. Yeah.
And because it is so foreign to my way of thinking, mm-hmm. and my ideas and thoughts on this, and to have to put myself in that mindset has been extremely destructive.
I will say that Rick does make the argument that a lot of people who are in this country illegally are taking jobs that they could have. So that is something that, you know, within his argument, he makes the argument that, you know, why should people who are not here legally take jobs that
no white man wants to do anyway? I mean, nobody wants those jobs. Rick certainly wasn't going
to
do those.
And there's another place in the play where you talk about, why don't I have the right to I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something about defending white people and defending this.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
You actually stage that as like, look, this is something. Which, look, this is what Trump has done. He's whipped up and molded a whole section of society that is, yes, they've been feeling the crunch since the steel mills have shut down and good work is not there anymore, and they look around and damn, all them people are getting welfare, and even these people that come into this country and they're being free medicine and all this stuff.
Who's
what the
looking
hell?
After the white guy?
Yeah, yeah. And it's very heavy, because and that's the interplay between you two is very, because there's that tension that's there that actually sort of I think helps to deepen the overall set of the play and the overall thrust of the play in terms of that tension that exists between you, even though you do have some kind of point where you're coming and you're talking to one another, and there's things that develop in your expression, your testimony, to Judith's character, your testimony to her is sort of very it's very moving, but it's still so much in a point where, I mean, look, a lot of Germans, even after World War II, didn't think they really did anything. Mm-hmm. What? I had nothing to do with that. come on. Which is something that sense, and I thought you guys really pulled it off, and the writing really pulled it off too. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I would just want to say too, and add that yes, the play is very much about a specific moment in history, and it's about now, and it's about this current administration, and about Trump and these immigration policies. But it's also, I think, about something more than that, and something deeper than that. And actually, Trump's name is not mentioned as much as you might think. It is about the current administration, but it's also about so much more. And that's what I think what makes the play so powerful, because it is timely and it is also timeless, because there is also the element of these two human beings being in a room alone together, wrestling with the human condition. And I think that Rick is the everyman in some way, where perhaps the seed of evil is planted in all of us somewhere, and he sees himself as just someone who has felt oppressed and unheard and impotent and unable to give voice to his own concerns, and finds himself part of this large machine that he felt was going to do good, but unravels out of control. And it really asks the fundamental question of, when is it time to say no? And that's the question that glorious character constantly asks Rick. Why didn't you stand up and say no? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Rick has all of his reasons why. My family, my responsibility, the guys that were working for me. But he's a human being caught in this large machine.
He's a perfect example of the Milgram experiment that we were talking about.
The Milgram experiment? Go ahead. What is it?
The idea that a regular, ordinary human being who has a family and children and goes to work every day and performs horrible atrocities and is just and will follow orders, will follow authority, even if it means hurting another human being,
yeah.
Because they're afraid of losing their job,
right.
Or because they're just a regular guy and they're caught up in that system and they're just going to follow directions.
Yeah, it's really important to me that audiences understand that this play is not just a political statement against the current administration, that it's about much more than that. And it's about the human condition and what it is to be a human being. Yeah. And it's about personal responsibility and accountability.
Now, I find myself sympathizing with him. I mean, I have to. I mean, I understand his plight. I have to understand where he's coming from.
Yeah,
because
Well, I think that's the problem. I think that
when
maybe
you say no, when you stand up,
right?
And for those of us who are on the left side of the aisle, who are have political left leanings, I think that this Rick personifies the person who put Trump into the White House. In that he is forgotten, he feels forgotten, and he just like so many of the Trump supporters wanted someone to say, we're important and do something for us. I think, unfortunately, we weren't really hearing those people. Mm-hmm. That there are a lot of people in the country,
and the irony being that
who are really suffering now, and we are all in the same boat. That's the problem, that we haven't found a way for us to all realize that we have these commonalities, and that's what's so lovely about the play. Like what Stephen's saying, it's really a play about two people who would never be in the same situation, in the same room, who are forced to sit down and talk to each other for an hour and a half, and it's an extraordinary play where two people are actually talking and listening to each other and learning something about the other person.
Okay, let me say this, though. Now, I first have to tell people that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with a whole gang of people from the Fountain Theater, and we're talking about the play Building the Wall, which is an incredibly powerful play, folks. You've got to see it. It's really an incredibly powerful piece of work, and you'll have discussions like we're having right now, and probably even more rolling around on the floor and all these other things. But there is, I mean, it's something that's really of these times and for these times, which I think is extremely important. But I did want to say one thing in relation to all this, which is that, you know, there was a point in Germany where there were, there was actually the good Germans that they talked about. And the good Germans never thought they did anything wrong, you know, and they were getting screwed. You know, hey, we had World War I, and we just lost everything, you know. And I don't know if you ever saw that. Did you ever see that movie Max? It was about Hitler as an artist. And John Cusack is a guy. He lost his arm in World War I, and he runs, and he's an art dealer and promoter, and he runs into Hitler, and he's like, and he's doing this thing of like, you know, he's looking at Hitler's paintings and all the fascistic, you know, eagles and stuff. But he's like, he's telling him, hey, you can be an artist. And then all of a sudden, you know, he makes a final meeting for Hitler. Hitler's sitting in a beer hall, and Cusack doesn't make it for whatever reason. In case Tony's going to go out and get this movie, Cusack doesn't make it for whatever reasons. And Hitler says, well, screw this. And he goes off and becomes, you know, Adolf Hitler the Nazi. But the thing is that there is a lot of this stuff where for a lot of people, very few Germans actually recognize the fundamental horror and illegitimacy of what's going on. You know, nobody ever challenged. And this is a stunning fact. No one ever challenged in Germany the legitimacy of the Hitler regime, of the Hitler government. They never challenged it. They never said this wasn't legitimate. You know, there were people who stood up against it, but, you know, but even then, they weren't that many. People went along because, yes, they felt like they got screwed, but morally and politically and every other way you can think of it that involves being a decent human being, they were really wrong, you know, and they needed to do something. They needed to break with that, you know, and I that's what I felt with your character, because I do have to say, you know, your character, you know, Bo, your character is really, you bring a certain amount of sympathy towards this character. You know, I'm not saying you have sympathy, but, you know, I'm saying you bring a certain amount of sympathetic feeling towards this character. But the audience has to catch itself, I think, to a certain extent, and say, wait a minute, there's something. And see, we're not going to get into what actually rolls out towards the end of the play. But there is a point where people have to make this decision. Nonetheless, this person is doing stuff that is heinous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can't close our eyes to that. You know, so.
That we also have to have the moral strength to stand up to, you know, authority figures and say, no, this is wrong. I can't do that.
Right, including people like your character, exactly.
Yes.
Your character, exactly. And look, quite frankly, in this society today, there's a lot more people who are out there saying that damn immigrants are taking my job or the blacks are taking my jobs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And actually, people need to say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here, and they need to stand up against the
correctly, stand in the right direction, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Well, that's part of the journey of the play, I think, for the audience, with the character of Rick. I think when we first see him, he's in prison orange jumpsuit, and he's a white Southern male and a Trump supporter, and I think we have certain preconceived ideas about
him. Talks a certain
way. Yeah, exactly. Says some things. But through the journey of the play, you realize that there's a real human being there. Mm-hmm. And if you may not sympathize, at least you understand him, which is the journey.
You know, I have a feeling we should have done the entire hour on this because we're just getting so close. But I am gonna have Robert come in and talk on the phone and talk about
He's
this.
Brilliant.
He's
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. But I also wanted to, there's something that he wrote where he said, in the writer's notes, he said, if you don't pay attention, the unimaginable can become the inevitable. And that actually, to me, is something that's really important in this because, the unimaginable can become the inevitable. And that's what I think
it
actually.
It has.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's happening right now in our country.
We're on that path right now.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think that's important. But, Steve, there's one other thing I wanted to talk with you about.
Okay.
And Michael, I meant to have you come in, but you've been doing a good job of coming in. But there's a whole way that this rolled out, which I thought was very significant, and I want people to understand, again, you alluded to it in the beginning, but I think it's actually important for people to understand, one, you jumped on this the moment you heard about it, but then you also were part of a whole way that this would move out and roll across the country and reach all these places. And I'm seeing, a theater in Silver Spring that I used to go to and stuff, that is now putting this stuff on in D.C., and then, all over the country there's plenty, and then I guess there's hope for more people coming into it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Robert sent me the play in December. I asked to read it. He sent it to me immediately. I read it and said, we have to do this play. We already had our season in place, but because we very much wanted to add our voice to the outcry that was against what was happening in our country, I wanted the Fountain Theater to make a statement with this play. So we moved the play that was scheduled out and put this play in. And also, the Fountain Theater is a member of the National New Play Network, which is a national organization of theaters around the country that are dedicated to developing and producing new plays. And so we have organized a rolling world premiere in which this play, after it opens in Los Angeles, another production opens in Denver, and then it will open in Washington, D.C., in Tucson, Arizona, and Miami. I'm very excited about the Forum Theater production opening in Washington, D.C., at Arena Stage later in April. So that will put the play just 2 miles away from the White House.
Yeah, that's what I was happy
about. So I'm hoping that we're going to get a tweet about our play, which would be the best review we could possibly get.
And post that sucker up.
That's right. Can't get better publicity
Please
than
call
that.
Us overrated, Donald Trump.
Fake theater.
Well, fake theater.
Well, closing. I wanted to thank all of you for this and for what you've done with this. And, it is incredible. I do think that there's the point about the unimaginable becoming inevitable, but also the way that this unfolds and shows people that you can go from, even if you're not remaining cognizant of what's actually happening and what the outcome of things that you do and say, if you're not actually paying attention to that tremendous horrible evil can be unleashed in the world and has been and will continue to be, and it's interesting because I was just thinking as we were talking, I saw this film, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was a documentary on Indonesia and all these people who had slaughtered, hundreds of thousands of people, they had slaughtered hundreds of thousands of communists. I mean, the rivers in Indonesia actually turned red. Yeah, and what happened was these guys were like laughing about and talking about the horrific things that they did to people, and you're sitting there going, that sort of came up on me after seeing the play and seeing that, because there's a certain amount of the banality of evil, mm-hmm. And there's a certain amount, and even those people who are saying, well, I'm getting screwed, so I'm just going to do this, it involves a certain amount of embracing the banality of evil, it's sort of that to me is a really heavy scene. So thank you guys very much for putting on the play and for coming in and let's do more of this.
Absolutely.
Sounds
good. Thank you very much.
Now look, my memory is failing, okay, but so I'm going to have to sit here and say, and I just lost the sheet. Okay. Anyway, I want to thank all of you for coming in today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having
us. All right. I found it. Okay. Bo Foxworth. See, I have to get the names exactly right. Yeah. Judith Moreland, who we spoke after party there. He had some very interesting things to say there too. And Michael McKetty. Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in South Philadelphia. You would think that I would. And Stephen Sachs, who I always enjoy seeing and talking with. So Stephen, thanks.
Absolutely.
All right. So.
And I just would want to add that the play is currently running at the Fountain Theater through May 21st. You can get tickets by calling 323-663-1525 or go to fountaintheater.com.
All right. Let me say that again. It's 323-663-1525. FountainTheater.com, and it's Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., and Mondays at 8 p.m. And are Mondays the pay what you can night?
They are. Yeah. Every Monday night at the Fountain is a pay what you can night.
Right, and it's worth paying whatever you can to see this film, all right? So thank you again very much.
A pleasure.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.